Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you doing this fine fall day?
You know, I've been better.
Better?
What? I've been better.
That's impossible.
I had a BlackBerry mishap last night.
Uh-oh.
Went to the doctor yesterday for a full physical, and they said, you need to be doing more cardio. So I got on the treadmill last night, feeling really good about it, multitasking. I went to put my BlackBerry in the holder, and I put it in my cup of water.
Oh. How'd that work?
Not so
waterproof?
Well.
Waterproof? Are BlackBerries waterproof?
No, they're not. No.
Now we know.
So this morning I woke up and went, still hadn't dried out. So I went and got a different one, which I don't know how to turn off yet. So.
A whole new BlackBerry or just the battery?
Just a whole new BlackBerry. I think the whole thing's new. But my life will be back in order once I have it synced up and all my contacts are there. But other than that, life is good. I saw Cavalia over the weekend.
And that's the Cirque du Soleil show?
Yes, with horses.
How was that?
Amazing.
You like horses?
I love horses, love Cirque du Soleil. I highly recommend it.
Nice.
Great
And that's
show.
At Atlantic Station, right?
Yes. So convenient, easy to get in and out of, and really the show is fantastic. I recommend folks check it out. I think there might still be tickets left because they added some shows. So, yes, it was wonderful. Speaking of wonderful, we have a great show this morning, Lee. Lots of interesting guests, and stay tuned for the whole 45 minutes or hour because you're in for a real treat. A lot of different types of businesses, but first up this morning, we have Dr. Stephen Briggs, who's here with us from Berry College. Dr. Briggs is the president, and I'm very anxious to hear all about Berry College and what's going on and the new updates with your work program. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Great to be here, Amy. Thanks.
So the one thing we always hear about when we hear about Berry College in the area is the focus on meaningful work experiences.
Absolutely.
So our listeners that aren't aware of what that means, can you enlighten us?
Sure. We at Berry, we believe in a great academic experience, but we think that also extends to learning how to do as well as learning about things. And so you learn chemistry in a classroom, but you learn chemistry in a laboratory just as much. Same with business, same with public relations, same in all areas. So we love to get students out doing things as well as learning about things in class.
So how do you encourage that doing rather than just sitting and passively absorbing?
Great question. We have over 300 different jobs on campus, and in any given semester, 85% of our students are working on campus. So we have jobs everything from accounting to working with the horses to public relations, graphic design, just a wide range of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And how many students go to Berry?
We have about 1,800 students.
And I know we always hear about the large campus.
It is large.
How large is large?
I like to say it's twice the size of Manhattan Island.
Wow. For 1,800 kids?
For 1,800 kids.
Isn't that a little overkill?
So, well,
you have big expansion plans.
No, it's part of our history, actually. Martha Berry believed that part of a school's endowment was the land. You can never take the land away. And over the years, that's developed into an active farm, a forestry program, lots of other opportunities. And so we have wonderful wetlands. We have places to hike and bike. And it's a great place to go to college, a great place to work as well.
26,000 acres.
Man.
Can you believe that?
No, that's...
Have you ever been?
No.
It is. It's beautiful.
It's a gorgeous place. It really is.
It's almost like a step back in time. But speaking of a step back in time, how have you modified some of your work experience programs to meet the needs of the 21st century?
Great question. In the early days, a lot of the jobs were hands-on, but they involved the agrarian economy of that time. So it was carpentry and plumbing and those sorts of things. Today, we try to extend it all the way into information technology and all the sorts of things that students will be doing when they graduate. And so we ask them when they come to think about what their resume is going to look like when they graduate as seniors and what experiences and what expertise do they want to have, what do they want to acquire during their 4 years.
Wow. So like 95% of the students participate in these programs?
95% by the time they graduate. In any given semester, it's 85% because they have other interests too. They study abroad. They participate in varsity athletics. And so we let them work it according to their schedule. But we think it's important for every student to have a lot of work experience as well as a lot of great problem solving, writing experience by the time they graduate.
Now, say I'm a student there and I'm going to get a degree in public relations. Is that one of the choices?
Absolutely.
So what would be an example of my work experience?
Well, it really is as varied as the student's interest. So we try to tie it off into a major, but many times the student has interest beyond the major as well. But in public relations, we have students that are working in our PR department, working on brochures that we create. They work on events management, everything from dinners at the President's House to major events for 2,000, 3,000 people. We had Tony Dungy with us in the spring giving a speech, and students would actually do all the coordination of that. We have students who do arrange our concert series. And so,
are they interns or they're actually, you know, really doing the work?
It's a blend, really. They really do the work. They're in charge. And so in our dairy, we have a dairy manager who's a staff person, but we also have a dairy manager who's a student who's responsible for shift supervisors who are responsible for other students working in the dairy. So it's a real job, and it's a real internship, and it's a real work experience.
So their resume is, they already have a resume when they leave. It's not like they're looking for their first job. They already have their first job.
Our typical student will have over 1,000 hours, maybe 2,000 hours of work experience, 6 or 7 different kinds of jobs. They're developmental in nature, so where they start in their freshman year is not where we expect them to be as seniors. And we want them to be able to say when they graduate what they're responsible for and how they provide a good service to someone else, no matter what their job is.
So this is unique to Berry College, but are there other universities or colleges that provide the same type of program?
There are a few. It's surprising that there aren't more. Rhodes College in Memphis has recently established a program that's an upper-level program, and they have about 100 students who have these kinds of work experiences, whereas we do about 1,500 a semester. So it's a difference in scale, but they have a great program for what they're doing. And then there's some other colleges, Berea and College of the Ozarks, that have done it, but they do it only for students who are really economically disadvantaged, and we have those students at Berry, but we also have students who come from very suburban or upper-class backgrounds who understand that work is important for them as well.
You mentioned the economy. Has the economy changed or made more jobs available for this meaningful work experience?
It's put more pressure on, in the sense that I think the importance of having job experience on your resume when you graduate has never been more apparent. Sort of regardless of your major or your area of interest. And so we found that our number of students wanting to work has increased. The number of students wanting to work more hours has increased with the economy. Partly that's because of needs of financial aid. Partly that's the reality of the job market.
So do the students get paid for these jobs, or does it go towards their schooling?
They can choose, but most of them choose to actually get a paycheck every 2 weeks. Some of them apply it directly towards their tuition. We let them choose which they want. So our work budget is about $4.5 million a year for students.
Wow.
So we do.
That's great. Now, how are you guys adapting to the infiltration of the online learning? It seems like more and more colleges are embracing online learning. How would this kind of dovetail in with the online learning trend?
Sure. For a place like Berry, we believe that the learning really occurs in a community. And so there's things that you can learn online, and that's wonderful. And we supplement many of our courses with online materials. But the learning experience itself is not sitting just in front of a computer. There are certain things you can learn doing that, but you cannot learn how to write an article doing that well. You can't learn how to interview a person. You can't learn how to milk a cow. you can't
right.
learn how to manage a genetics a project. You can't work in a wetlands on a computer. And so,
but do you see online learning as something that there's going to be more of in the future, or less of, or the same?
I do more online learning. So I think for all of us, we do our research, we do a lot of things online. But I think the mistake is to think that online learning can supplement or supplant all other kinds of learning.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you
it complements it?
How do you see it evolving in terms of, as the younger generation gets more comfortable online and using, you know, their phones and all this online stuff, do you think that people are going to be going to colleges remotely all over and then occasionally coming into the college and having that real-life experience? Do you think it's going to evolve?
I think it will continue to evolve, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think it will continue to supplement in really creative ways what we do in a more traditional setting. But there are certain things you simply can't learn by yourself online. There has to be there's some people for whom that's the only option, and we understand that. But
right.
it's not the first option. It shouldn't be the first option.
Right.
You can't learn unless you're sitting across from a person, looking them eye to eye. It's different doing this than sitting on a phone somewhere else
right.
and calling into this time together.
It is. It's a really unique place, too, if you have the chance to visit. I know we visited when my daughter was probably 5, and she's 14 now, and she still talks about she wants to go to Berry College, and she really wants to milk the cows.
Good, let me give you some materials here before I leave. So.
Yeah, it's not too early to start, I'm sure, but it is. It resonates with a certain type of person, I think, that really likes that – experience and the experience of learning in more of a hands-on approach.
Right. And the agricultural part is an important part of the heritage, and it's still a lot of fun and tremendously helpful and productive. But it's a full, I mean, we're by no means only about the horses and the cattle. We have a full range of business majors, education majors, science majors. And for each of those areas, whether you're in business or whether you choose to major in history, if you major in history, coming out with some hands-on experience, whether it be related to history or be related to other things, is really important for getting a job.
Is it a private school or public?
It's a private school.
So the Hope Scholarship doesn't...
The Hope Scholarship actually goes to students. So if you qualify for Hope Scholarship in the state of Georgia, you do get it at a private institution as well as a public. Our portion is a little bit smaller, which doesn't seem entirely fair to me, but it does apply in both cases.
So you can put it towards your tuition?
Absolutely.
How can people learn more about Berry College?
www.berry.edu.
Wow.
And that's B-E-R-R-Y, like your BlackBerry.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm sorry about your BlackBerry, but your new pink one is very cute. So.
Yeah, the new pink one.
It, or mauve or whatever.
Hopefully
that is.
It'll be up and running very soon. My lifeline, everything's in that. Wow. Thank you so much, Dr. Briggs, for being with us today and sharing with us just a little bit about Berry. There's so much to know, and we hope folks will reach out and go to the website and take a campus tour.
We'd love to have visitors. It's a great place, particularly in the fall, this time of year. The hiking and biking trails and the trees are beautiful.
Where is it in relation? It's north?
Rome, Georgia. So we are between Atlanta and Chattanooga, about 20 miles west of I-75 as you get to Cartersville.
It's a pretty drive, too. Very pretty drive. I was just up there last week for business, and it is. The leaves are really starting to change.
Yeah, they're right at the peak right about now, I think.
Yeah, and, it's beautiful. Well, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Amy.
Speaking of the leaves changing, I can think of no place I'd rather be than the Lenfoot Hike Inn. Haven't been yet, Lee, but I plan to go very soon. Anxious to hear all about it, our next guest, Richard Judy from the Lenfoot Hike Inn. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Good morning. Great to be here.
So the Lenfoot Hike Inn, I had never heard about it until your PR person or somebody contacted us. And I went online and I thought, how come I haven't heard of this? Is it new?
Well, we've been there for 11 years, and we have been really making a push to get our name out there the past couple of years. And we've shown up in Southern Living and a lot of major daily newspapers and that sort of thing. And now we're with you. And the result is that we're getting record-breaking business even during the recession. So we're pretty pleased with the fact that people want to get in the outdoors and experience a backcountry lodge.
So how did it originate?
Well, it was an idea of some people with the Department of Natural Resources with the state of Georgia, specifically a gentleman named Bert Wirtz. And Bert worked with some people with the Georgia Appalachian Trail Club, which is the organization that oversees the Appalachian Trail in Georgia. And the idea there was to get some hikers involved in a backcountry lodge concept. And they got a fellow by the name of Garland Reynolds, who's an expert in environmental architecture, to design the place. And they got the legislation through and finally got the place built. And it now is run by a nonprofit organization, and that's who I work with. I'm a volunteer with that organization and on their board.
What is a backcountry lodge?
A backcountry lodge is a place that requires you to hike to get there. That's the simplest way
to describe it. So you can't just pull up your car. You got to park somewhere.
Not unless you got a very unusual car. But the interesting thing about the hike in is that all you have to tell people is that the trail to the hike in begins at the top of Amicalola Falls. Mm-hmm. Most people know where that is.
Right.
It's not far north of Dawsonville, not far west of Dahlonega. And when you get up there, you check in at a visitor center, and then you hike 5 miles up over oak and hickory ridges and down through rhododendron and laurel tunnels and across mountain streams. Gorgeous, diverse trail. You may see wild turkey. You may see a black bear. Fantastic hiking experience, and families love it, and couples love it. And I've noticed that the people who enjoy it the most are groups of women that get together and come up there because they get away from everybody.
Right. Now, who's taking your luggage up there?
Your luggage will be a backpack, and it's very light. You carry a change of clothes and a book and a camera.
So this isn't a place that it's not an extended stay hotel.
It's an overnight experience, or you can stay several nights. We have a delicious breakfast, a delicious dinner, a terrific trail lunch available to you. We have hot showers heated by the sun, solar power. We have even have hair dryers, so that you don't have to worry about that.
Uh-huh.
We have composting toilets, which save like 200,000 gallons of water a year.
Wow.
We have worms that eat our food waste and our paper waste up there. The kids love looking at the worm beds. We even have photovoltaics. all of these environmental features of the inn are there in business partnerships. And we work with businesses to get them donated or give us a good deal on them, and it's been a great program for us.
How many people can stay there one time?
We have 20 rooms and as many as 40 people or even a few more if we squeeze a few extra kids in.
It looks pretty rustic online. So they're all twin-size beds, right?
Little bunk beds.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one lady that came up there for a second honeymoon with her husband and looked in and said, oh, bunk beds.
Yeah. My husband said, wow, that doesn't accommodate the 6'5" gentleman like him. But he's used to sleeping in a bunk bed. You just pull it out from the bed, from the wall, and then put pillows or something in. That won't stop us from coming, that's
yeah, come
for
on
sure.
Up.
So some of the other things, it's family-style eating. Something about somebody said something about weighing your plate or encouraging not to waste. Tell me about that.
In order to encourage people not to waste food, we ask them, take whatever you want, but don't leave waste. And that works pretty well. And we weigh the waste, and you get a smiley face. The whole group gets a smiley face if there's a small amount of waste. And that's become kind of a fun thing. We also, and your BlackBerry situation would be perfect because we ask people to turn off their cell phones when they get up there. There's no stereo. There's no telephone, no cell phone, no fax machine, none of that stuff.
No electrical outlets in the rooms.
No electrical outlets in the rooms. And, and the way this works is people, you see families actually sitting down and playing board games together or playing horseshoes or meeting other people. And it really does work to get people out of their little box and into a more natural environment.
So there's like a community area in the inn where people can congregate and meet?
Exactly. We've got a lobby area, and then we've also got what we call the Sunrise Room. And the Sunrise Room has books and puzzles and games and all kinds of things to keep people busy. It's a lot of fun. We also have an after-dinner program that's either about nature or the outdoors, and we have a tour of the facility so that people can see all the environmental features that we have there.
Now, how much does this set you back going there?
Well, an individual can come for $70 a night, a couple for $97 a night plus tax, which includes two meals, so it's really a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
But if you watch our website, which is at www.hike-in.com, we have specials and opportunities to get even better prices.
So like a family, how much would a family be?
Well, a family of four, if they got two rooms, we do have child rates, so it would be somewhat cheaper per person than the rates I just gave you, but the best way to check the specifics would be to go to our website.
Go online.
Can I bring my dogs?
I'm afraid that we don't allow dogs there, and there are some reasons for that. Yeah, we did have some problems.
What about my wild turkey? Can I bring that?
You'll probably see some along the way this time of year.
It's a state park facility, but if you're discreet, we probably won't notice.
As a matter of fact, I think I'd like a break from my dogs. They would be more work
than... You can bring your chickens. That's probably okay.
No, not so much. Not all nine of them. You know, this does sound like a really unique experience. Is there a certain time of year I don't want to go?
Here's the thing that I think is the best kept secret about the hike in. It's really, really cool in the wintertime because the leaves are off the trees, the views are great.
Sure.
The crowds aren't quite as bad. Summertime, everybody thinks it's blazing hot, but you're actually a couple of thousand feet above the Atlanta area there.
Right.
And so you get some prevailing winds. It's really pleasant if you're sitting there in your short and T-shirt. So it's really not a bad time, any time of year to be up there. We're open just about every day of the year, really, except Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And we usually shut down for a couple weeks in February for maintenance.
Now, I'm sure in the fall it must be really popular.
Exceptionally so. The past couple of Octobers, we've had record years. And thanks to some of the good publicity we've been getting, fortunately, we're doing very well, getting a lot of guests up there.
Maybe I should go during the week.
During the week is the best time to avoid the crowds. It absolutely is. The weekends book months in advance, and they're always crowded. It is fun, though, when we've got a full house. You meet some really neat people up there.
I bet you do.
Are you getting people from the area or people traveling from all over to go there?
We'd be in big trouble if it weren't for Atlanta Metro, but we have had people from around the world and people from all over the Southeast and pretty much nationally as well.
Terrific. Give us the website one more time.
It's www.hike-in.com, and that's a good place to go to get all filled in.
Great. Richard, I'm going to see you in the next, let me say, 60 days.
Let me know when you come, and I'll try and come up there and visit with you.
I would love that. Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us today. You know that's right up my alley, Lynn.
I know. That's perfect for you.
Yeah, I can't wait. And the website's great, too. It talks a lot about the different programs they have. Like, I thought the showers being heated by solar panels is really cool. And it talks a little bit more about the worms and stuff. Their website's great. So please visit it. We would love that. All right, next up we have Heather Wilson, and Heather is here to bring us a little bit of a different insight on bench strength. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thanks for having me.
So, Heather, tell us about bench strength, and you do a lot of different things. Let's maybe get a snapshot first of bench strength.
Great. Well, I started bench strength to create a community for independent consultants, and so bench strength offers three main areas. One, we have a community, so we're going to do co-working. We want collaboration with people. We offer workshops and coaching, and then we also offer placements at corporations as a new business outlet for them.
And you work with a lot of different kinds of companies too, right?
I do. We work with a lot of the Fortune 500 companies here in town, but we also work with small to medium-sized companies. Anybody that needs additional staffing or interim staffing to help them with their projects and their work, they could call me and I can facilitate an introduction to someone that does that. So it's a really good connection point between companies and people that are starting their own businesses.
Now, when you're the people that work with you in this community, are they people that maybe they worked previously for a big corporation that maybe got downsized and now they're, you know, kind of consulting? Are they looking to typically get back into a big corporation, or are they kind of going, you know what, I like this flexibility, I like this kind of lifestyle?
Actually, great question. What I have found is that there is not one size fits all. I think a lot of people get downsized and then they pick up a consulting project and then they find out that they love it. They love the flexibility. They love the freedom. They love the people. And so they continue doing that. The other part of it is that a lot of people are frustrated with corporate America and they decide to leave and start their own business because they really want to focus on something that they're passionate about, or they want that flexibility to focus with on their family or travel, et cetera.
What are some of the challenges that a person who worked in a big company, you know, and all of a sudden it's an eat what you kill world, is a different kind of lifestyle than they're used to, where they can just go, hey, help desk, my BlackBerry fell in my water, you know, fix this for me.
I'll tell you, that is the probably one of the biggest challenges of being an independent consultant. I've been doing this for 5 years, and you don't have that IT, you don't have the legal. I used to be able to do, you know, multi-million dollar websites in, you know, a short period of time by just picking up the phone. And when you're doing it yourself, you have to either figure it out, right, or you have to pay for it. And so I think that's a huge challenge. But another challenge that people don't think about is the loneliness. You know, you're used to going to work and you see the security guard, you see the people in the cafeteria, you walk down the halls and you just say hi. When you're working on your own, whether it's at home or in your own office, you don't have that interaction with people. So the reason I started this community is to really bring people together, whether they want to work at home 2 days, 3 days a week, but to bring them together so that they can collaborate, share ideas, partner on projects, maybe pitch work together. And I think that community is really important as an independent consultant.
Why do you think it's important or beneficial for companies to use an independent consultant?
Well, based on what's been going on in the economy, companies, I believe, are not going to staff up the way that they have in the past. And so they're really reaching out to independent consultants to fill in those gaps. So whether it's someone on maternity leave or they need a specialized skill to come in and help, they can call on an independent consultant for that out-of-box thinking. They can call them for a specific skill, and they don't have to keep that on staff. So it really saves with financial costs.
They don't have to pay the benefits.
Yeah, right? They don't have to pay the benefits. They don't have to pay the salary. They can have a really specific skill set for 60 days versus having them on staff all the time.
Right, and if it doesn't work out, they get rid of them.
And that goes both ways.
Right.
If you don't like a corporate culture, a lot of people are getting out of corporate today because they have certain values and they have certain passions that they're really are important to them. And if they don't want to work with that type of person or they don't want to work at that culture of that company, they can try it out on a consultant basis and then they can decide not to work there anymore.
Right, if it's a fit or not.
Yeah.
Now, do you have an actual co-working location where you bring people and they all hang out with their laptops?
I don't yet. I'm working on it, and I'm also working on some partnerships with some existing co-working spaces. What I have now is I do a monthly breakfast where I get people together. And then I also do workshops where people come in, and it's great networking, and they get to learn about all the different areas to help them grow their business.
When's the next one?
The next one is this Friday. I have them over at Gazueta Business School at Emory University, and it's on Friday from 9 to 5.
And then, so it's an all-day event?
It is an all-day event. It's for people that are really trying to figure out, should I get into consulting or what do I need to do? So even if you're really skilled at doing your job, you know, whether it's in public relations or in marketing, you might not know how to set up your business. And so in this one-day workshop, we take people through how to find out what their passion is, what their vision is to set up their business, the legal entity. One of the best parts of the day is at lunchtime we have a success panel come in. So people that have been doing independent consulting for, you know, three plus years come in and really talk about the day in the life of an independent consultant. They talk about the good, the bad, the ugly.
Right.
And then in the afternoon, we have a marketing professional talk about what you need to do to set up your marketing, what kind of collateral you need. And then we have a social media expert come in and talk about LinkedIn and Facebook and how do you use that for new business. And then there's just a lot of opportunities for interaction and networking. And it's the 100% of the people that have taken the class so far would recommend it to a friend. So it's a really fabulous day.
It sounds like it. A lot of information in one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a lot of experience working for Home Depot, Delta Airlines, Intercontinental Hotels. I mean, those are big names.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience that you bring to someone, to an independent consultant, is amazing. Do you think this is a trend? Is it a fad? Is this going to pass? Because, you know, for a long time, it seemed like if someone didn't have a job or if they were searching for a job, what are you? I'm an independent consultant. What
right.
do you think?
That just meant unemployed. Like, that was the code. I'm a consultant. I'm freelance.
I don't think it's a short-term fad. I think it's definitely something here to stay. I think the people that have been doing it are very qualified to do it. They've done great work. The companies are seeing the benefit of it, and they don't have to carry that salary. And
right.
so I think it's just it's a win-win for everybody. Work is changing. I think technology has really impacted the way that we can do our work, and companies are starting to realize that you don't have to have that FaceTime. You don't have to do the work between 9 and 5, and you can really get someone that might have more creative thinking that you wouldn't be able to keep on your salary full-time, but you can bring them in for those short-term projects and get that great thinking.
How do you recommend somebody that's involved in independent consulting? How do they make their way through the maze of a corporation to find those opportunities?
Well, that's what Bench Strength really does, is I've got a lot of relationships with companies here in town of all sizes, and I'm trying to become the person to call when they need an independent consultant. And my network of independent consultants and small businesses is about 200 right now. So I have a really wide range of people in the network, from photographers to marketers, public relations, event coordinators, project managers, and then I'm really concentrating on working with the companies to let them know about this community.
Because right now the companies, it's kind of a, how do they find their people? I know that you want them all to call you, but
yeah.
Now how typically are they? Are they reaching out to like former employees?
Yeah.
Is that typically the path?
Yeah. Right now they're reaching out. They'll, you know, if they have a project and they need somebody, they'll be like, okay, we need someone to help us with this loyalty program. And they'll either call someone that they know that used to work there or that they know in the industry, or they'll put it up on LinkedIn and say, hey, I'm looking for a contractor.
Oh,
and
boy.
So people will do that. It's really just a referral-based network. But I see some problems with that going in the future, because not everyone carries the right insurance. Not everyone has the right legal structure. Not everyone has the right background. So if you can have those references checked, make sure that they have all the right requirements, it's going to be safer for a company long-term.
Right.
Absolutely. Save them a lot of time, too,
mm-hmm.
by using a company like Bench Strength.
Mm-hmm.
You came highly recommended, Heather, by several people, so it's obvious that your network is strong. You have a great reputation in the area. But the other thing that I thought was interesting is everybody that talked about, you said you put so much focus on education and really making people feel comfortable in what they're doing. Can you talk a little bit about how that approach has helped you? Because you know, like your networking seminars and the workshop on Friday, tell us about your approach.
Well, I started the workshops as a way to really bring people together to educate people on how to become an independent consultant, because I would meet with people for coffee and they'd say, who's your lawyer? How did you do this? How did you do that? And I just saw this need. And I also believe that I don't have all the answers, and I think a lot of other experts have either specific skills, and that you can learn from other people's life experiences. So by bringing these people together, and, you know, I usually have between 20 and 40 people at these workshops, it's an intimate group, and it allows the speakers, who are also independent consultants, to practice their speaking skills, share their experience, And then the people that are participating get to ask questions to these experts in a legal field, in a marketing field, in a social social media expert. And there's so much information out there today that to have those experts come in and give their time where, you know, normally they're getting paid for that and they're coming in and sharing this mm-hmm. with this group is just great. And then everybody walks away with such really deep connections, and those relationships have continued to go on past those workshops.
Wow. What a great service, Lee.
Yeah, that's great.
We have a lot of listeners that are consultants and that like that. I mean, people that have attention deficit disorder or just like things changing. What a great career to be with a company and then, you know, go do your job at a different company. I think the job of a consultant would be very exciting. Do you ever meet with people and say, you know what, you probably need a 9-to-5 desk job with someone looking over your shoulder? It's a certain mindset. I mean, like my husband could never be a consultant. If you sent him home to work, he'd be playing the guitar and watching TV. He needs to go to an office and have structure. Some people do. How do you find that out, and how do you coach people maybe into something different?
It's really funny. It becomes quite apparent early on when people are starting to explore this. As part of the workshop, we do a visioning exercise on what do you want your day to look like and how do you like to work. And I think, you know, when it comes from internally from the person that's deciding what to do, I think that's really important. But a lot of people have said, hey, I want to try this, and then they get into it and they're not good with the structure, or they don't want to sell themselves and they don't like that. So what I love about independent consultant is even if you are, quote, a 9-to-5 person, there are consulting assignments that you can structure that way. And so personally, I like the ones that are in and out, that I worked from home, and I liked fast-paced, really different, and I like to take a little bit more risk. Another person that I know has to have a locked and loaded program, and so she gets a one-year retainer. She still owns her own business. She's still an independent consultant. She can take on smaller projects because she doesn't have that connection to the corporation, but she has a job, she's got a monthly retainer, so it gives her that flexibility it gives her that structure.
And the security.
It gives her the structure and security to go to a company and get the funds that she needs on a monthly basis.
That's interesting. How can people find out more about Bench Strength and the things that you have going on?
They can go to the website at www.benchstrength-inc.com.
Heather, it's been a pleasure. I'm so happy to finally meet you. Again, you come highly recommended. I encourage any of our listeners that are in the consulting field to reach out to Heather and Bench Strength and tap into her expertise. Thanks for being with us today.
Forget her event this Friday.
Yes, her event
space?
This Friday.
Is it?
Yes, there's still space available.
Good. And people can register for that at your website?
Yes. Same website, www.benchstrength-inc.com.
Excellent. Thank you. You know, I love smart women, Lee, and I love to have smart women on the show. Heather was definitely one of them. Next up, we have Bernadette Bowes from the Bowes Group, Focal Point Coaching and the Bowes Group. And I met Bernadette through some entrepreneurs and some franchise owners that raved about Bernadette and what she has to offer. Whereas Heather might work more with a consultant, Bernadette has a lot to offer as far as coaching with individual business owners, and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
So Bernadette, not all businesses are created equal, and not all entrepreneurs are the same. How do you go about your business?
Well, initially what I'll go about is finding out what exactly is that business owner / entrepreneur is trying to accomplish in their business. What are their goals and their dreams and aspirations? Why did they go into that particular business? And where is it that they're trying to take it? And then from there, we just simply ensure that they have the plans in place and they have the motivation and the focus to execute against those plans.
Okay. So like Heather was talking more about consultants where there's actually a plan in place. You're mostly working with business owners and entrepreneurs that – you know, they have an idea, but they might not know how to implement it.
Yeah, there's a lot of making things up as you go.
There is a lot of making things up as you go. I work with anyone who has a blank piece of paper and a concept to people that have been in business for 20 to 25 years.
Okay.
I have yet to have someone hand me a business plan.
Still? You're still waiting for that person?
I'm waiting because I'm going to give them a really big prize. And so just getting their heads around the fact that they do have to have a plan, they do have to have structure, in order to execute against those plans is one of the biggest hurdles. But it's also, I happen to find it to be the most fun in regards to helping them draft that plan and execute against it.
So what are some of the challenges that startups might see over maybe an established company trying to grow their business?
Startups will see taming the excitement and the desire to just want to run out and do everything to the fact that the ones that have been in business even just a year, they've already learned that money goes quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Money goes quickly and motivation is hard to maintain and the energy wears out if they don't start seeing results. So the startups just really need to even be more concerned about having that plan, especially that budget, because they'll run out. For instance, I'll give you an example of the number one thing they'll want to do. They'll hear all this about social media and marketing, and I have to have a brand and a logo and business cards and flyers, and I can't sell unless I have all those things in place. $5,000 later, they're realizing that they don't even know after they've spent it. What they've spent is no longer relevant mm-hmm. because it's not in the direction that they're taking even 6 months later. So what I have a hard time in needing to do is try to tame their excitement and their creativity of wanting to just run out and start their business.
How has the economic situation impacted your clients and how you're working with them now?
Impacting my clients, it doesn't because I don't allow it. I really have a hard time with the clients or with clients especially using the economy as an excuse for whatever challenges they're experiencing. So when someone works with me, I basically kind of, you know, nip that in the bud and just work with them to be on the positive side and show them the strategies and the things that they can put into place that will actually make them successful. If it's prospects and it's actually being able to obtain or acquire new clients, the economy obviously is still projecting fear of, you know, spending money. And it's a hold on to your cash and cash is king type of mentality still out in the media. So as much as they want to get started, as much as they know they need support, because the one thing about a business owner or an entrepreneur is it's lonely at the top. And they're all by themselves. They know they don't have an advisory board. They don't even have a partner in most cases to bounce ideas off of and to keep them accountable to what it is that they're trying to do. So a coach or even a consultant, I mean, their job is to provide that type of support and guidance and accountability in order for them to be able to accomplish what it is that they've set out to do.
Now, if how are you advising your clients? Is this the time to be kind of just waiting it out, like you said, that cash is king, or should you be spending money? Like, how do they know when, you know, when to pull back and when to go forward?
Great question. One thing that, coming from a corporate world myself, the one thing that businesses, whether it be small businesses or corporations, tend to do in this type of environment is pull the plug on selling and marketing. The
right.
two things that are going to drive
right.
you
right.
to being able to generate revenue. So what I tend to do with my clients is to look at overall at their expenses and their cash flow and their cash standing, and then be realistic about they still need to spend on selling and marketing. Absolutely.
Right. But maybe it's not the good time to get a new car.
But it's maybe it's not a good time to get new equipment. Maybe
right.
it's not, you know, they can cut back on some other expenditures that they have in their business.
Right.
But selling and marketing and their people. And not to say that they can't. I worked with one client that we just had to kind of adjust how they pay them, you know, and give them other things than just salary.
Right.
Right now, commission-based positions for future equity or for future, you know, revenue in the business is on the rise because of the fact that businesses need people, but they don't necessarily have the cash up front to pay those people, so they're getting very creative as to how they can still acquire that type of skill.
Interesting. Do you have any training programs at all that business owners can just tap into if somebody doesn't want to come on as a client, per se? Do you have workshops or anything you do?
We are kicking off our much-in-demand Creation of the Entrepreneur teleseminar series. It'll start in November, on November 18th. And they're 90 minutes, stay at home, stay in your office, get on the phone and learn not only from myself as a business coach, but other experts from across the business. I address everything from simple things we'll start off with around goal setting and time management issues and business planning and those type of things, all the way to the legal issues, the marketing, sales, operations, HR. And they're going to hear every couple weeks from experts across those functions and those responsibilities as to what they should be doing, addressing predominantly the small business, but it's really applicable to any size of business. And they'll be able to really take away some very action-oriented tools and techniques and tips that they can apply to that their business that very day.
Wow. Interesting. I met Bernadette at an Aflac event because working for Aflac, we all kind of own our own little businesses. Mm-hmm. And she did a great presentation to the folks at Aflac that got great reviews. And I know I've implemented some of the strategies you taught me that day. And
right. You may not have noticed she's a little dynamic. Did you notice that?
Who's a little dynamic?
Bernadette's a little passionate
I can
about
tell
what
you.
She talks about.
Yeah, she's exciting to watch, and I guarantee nobody fell asleep when she was talking. That's for sure. Now, Bernadette, I understand you're writing a book.
I am.
So where are we in the process?
You're taking the plunge into authordom?
Oh, wow. Yes, I am. And
now,
Amy's
now
putting
on
me
record.
On the hook. Actually, I'm putting myself on the hook, but... yes, I am writing a book and am right now finalizing the proposal to be sent out, and of course the whole self-publishing strategy right. decision. And the book is really a confession. And you're going to have to tell me if there's certain words that are not allowed to be used.
Go for it.
and basically, the book is a confession of a self-proclaimed bitch.
Uh-huh.
So it's basically about really about transformation and through my corporate career and just what I felt I needed to project and what I needed to live in order to survive the corporate organizations and be as successful as I was.
Mm-hmm.
And once I left corporate, I was. I found that shedding that, it was the most, you know, revealing and self-discovery of the fact that I can be just as successful, if not more so, which
right.
I've proven in the past couple of years, being myself.
On
my own terms. People want to do business with people they like, trust, and know.
Exactly.
And if you're not being yourself, they're going to smell it. So mm-hmm. I just realized it was time for me to kind of address that. And really to help those women as well as men, because I've had a number of men very interested in this story and wanting a male version of it.
Hmm.
So, so it will be very interesting.
So we need to stay tuned.
Yes, you do.
Keep us posted, Bernadette. How can people reach you?
The website is www.thebosegroup.com.
And spell that.
Bose is BOAS.com. And they can also, there's a blog there, and they can find the information about the events on the events page. And they can also sign up for the newsletter, which is contributed by other authors and other writers.
Mm-hmm.
So the content is anything and everything that a small business would need and want to know. And that comes out on a monthly basis as well.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being with us today,
Thank you
Bernadette.
For having me. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks.
I am excited about our next guest, and last but certainly not least, we have Mike Cleary. And Mike, I'm anxious to hear more from you about Abcom, and I thought it was really interesting when you sent me your information. You were talking about face-to-face marketing. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So I've been to many a trade show, and I know for a fact you go by the ones that have the best-looking exhibit and the people that are smiling.
I thought it was the chocolate.
No, because they – honestly, I was at a trade show last week, and people love the Aflac duck. I mean, people will flock for that silly duck. But, you know, there were other people that had great prizes. They were giving away flat-screen TVs and things like that, but they didn't have signage, and it wasn't leading people to them. Tell us what you do. Tell us about Abcom.
Well, that is one portion of face-to-face marketing, and it's historically been the biggest part of our business. The trade show exhibit design, setup, installation, dismantle, servicing, all throughout that, all services. Most clients want to just show up at a trade show, sell, and then leave. And we take care of everything before, sometimes during and after. But our key criteria when it comes to those booths that you were walking past is that if you didn't see what you wanted or got what they did in 3 to 6 seconds, then it's an unsuccessful booth. Hmm. You have to be able to communicate effectively and quickly in this world. And through that history, we've tagged on other businesses that we actually take that same philosophy to. If you're putting on a company event or a consumer event, we handle all the services behind that, as well as the merchandising and communication at that event to effectively get the points across. Several of your previous guests have talked about the entrepreneurial need to get the word out. We've found that trade shows and events have become one of the most cost-effective and one of the most effective ways at creating new business, because you've got somebody there right there in front of you, face-to-face, establishing that personal connection.
It's so true. I went to a medical device trade show a couple weeks ago, and I was drawn to some of them because I got the concept. Oh, it's an anti-snore device, or it was very obvious just from first glance where I wanted to direct my attention. And trade shows, you're basically getting people that are coming because they want to buy. You just have to attract them. That's interesting. How has the economy affected your business? I mean, you just said it. People need to still spend money on that. You're spending money for the trade show. You might as well maximize your efforts, right?
It is. But I think we've all seen the last 18 months, maybe even in some industries 2 years, there's been a dramatic impact on everybody's business. What we've found, though, and I've surveyed every one of our clients and even some of the folks who aren't our clients that I know have gone to some of these shows, and over the last 10 months of this year, because remember, a lot of these budgets are set a year in advance, 6 months in advance. Over the last 10 months of this year, everybody I've talked to said, A, there were fewer exhibitors, and B, there were fewer people walking the show floor. But man, when somebody walked in the booth, they were doing business with me. So what we've found is that while there are fewer people on the floor, they are the ones that you want to be
right.
seeing.
The buyers are going. They're not just bringing like 50 million staff members anymore. They're just saying, we're just bringing the buyers.
That's right. There's no longer four people coming along because
right.
they're
the entourage.
To be with.
Right.
That's right. So it's still been a very effective, from a business standpoint, in measurement and ROI.
How do you measure it?
Actually, there are two ways that historically companies have measured: return on investment, which you're welcome to have at it. That's usually the accountant's realm. I've always found that to be difficult with most businesses that have gotten to the point where they can go to trade shows. But we really have coached over the last decade or so to measure it as ROO, return on objectives. Mm-hmm. So set your objectives before you get to that trade show. Say, how many CFOs are going and how many of those do I want to see, and are there specific ones I want to see? And then you measure yourself against that specific objective.
So you're defining the objective as whatever, you can make it whatever you want the objective to be. Right.
Very, very clearly. It's what's relevant to driving your business. And so there, and we counsel folks to only pick the top four or five, because that's what you want your sales folks in the booth focused on.
So if it is to meet CFOs, then you're going to be, when a CFO is sniffing around, you're going to be more attentive to that person, as opposed to if it's,
it's really three parts, Lee. It's before you get there, you want to be soliciting them to come to your booth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When you're at the trade show, you want to be, as you said, making sure that you know who they are as they're about to come up to your booth.
Right.
And there are different tools to help you with that. And then after the show, you want to be back in touch with them.
Following up.
Or asking them why they didn't come by.
Right. Now, but you help them with all aspects of that, isn't that
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yes. We have taken trade shows from being just the event that you attend, and it's a party in Las Vegas, to really being the most effective piece of your marketing strategy. I come from 25 years of background in the corporate world. I used to hate those events where everybody just sort of stood around the booth.
Mm-hmm.
It was
right.
it was a loss of revenue or a loss of budget for the company, and ineffective, and a waste of my time.
Right, because all the people in the booth are looking like, hey, what are we going to do after this thing's over?
Exactly. It's more focused on the dinner afterwards.
Right.
So we really take the approach that this is By all measurements, by all surveys, the most effective piece of marketing you can do dollar for dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So we get very serious about it with our clients, and especially in this day and age, they are very appreciative of that approach.
Mm-hmm.
Promotional products are key, too, because when you take away something that you're not going to toss, you're going to remember and you're going to have the information. What are some of the hot promotional products?
Besides Aflac Ducks.
Yeah, besides Aflac. And they really are a draw. I'm once again affected by all those years in corporate life where I do not like tchotchkes that you're handing out that are wasteful.
Yeah,
because
right.
Then the little old lady at the end of the show comes through and swipes them into her bag and takes them home to her dog or her grandchildren.
Right.
One of the two. We focus on promotional products use at trade shows or as a Salesforce tool, that they are going to be the things that are either left on the desk or left in the pocket, because you want them to see that logo 6 and 7 and 8 more times.
Right.
That's what's effective about them. So we incorporate that as part of that whole strategy with trade shows or with face-to-face marketing for sales teams.
So what's hot now?
Well, one of the clearly useful and also hot tools have been the thumb drives.
Yeah, the flash drives.
Yeah, flash drives are great. You can go up to more than a gig, which is more information than anyone will look at, I can assure you. But you can incorporate all the visuals that you want on that, and at a glance, they are seeing your logo on the outside plus getting a presentation on your materials.
What about iPods? I've seen people use iPods. They'll fill it with their content and give it away.
That's expensive. Yeah, all these electronic tools are relevant for the right company and for the right message, but they're a waste if they're not the right message or the right tool.
Right. So. What great services you provide. We're running out of time, Lee.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any final thoughts, Mike? As far as businesses and what type of company should reach out to you?
Well, we have historically done business everywhere from Shallow Baptist Church up to the Coca-Colas and Verizons and everything in between. But I would tell you that over the next 2 to 3 years, as this economy comes back, that trade shows and events and even branded environments inside their office are going to become more and more a part of the marketing mix. And that's where we can help people focus on that and do it most effectively.
Now, can you help somebody if they want to create an event from scratch?
Absolutely.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. And is there a website folks can go to?
www.abcom-inc.com. I thought we were the only one who had that dash ink.
And look, it's catching on. It's a new trend. You're hearing it here first.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks so much for being with us today. Gosh, Lee, people need to – it's so true. When I go to a trade show, if it doesn't catch my eye, I probably won't stop.
Right, just blow by it.
Yeah, you do. It's a wonderful service, especially to have somebody with that much experience behind
him. Well, he knows the best practices.
Yes. Thanks to all of our guests today. And, Lee, until next week, I hope you have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Enjoy the fall weather.